Hello and welcome to the latest edition of China Inc. by Bamboo Works, where we discuss the latest business and financial news from China and what it all means. I'm Doug Young, Bamboo Works Editor-in-Chief, and I'm joined today by Renee Vangus, one of our founding partners, who's also a longtime China watcher and former investment banker. Today, we'll look at the latest developments in the West as it contends with a flood of Chinese electric vehicle exports. We'll also look at the latest wrinkle in the unraveling of e-commerce giant Alibaba's plan to break itself up. We'll start with electric vehicles, or EVs, which look set to become a major point of trade friction between China and the West in the years ahead. China's built up huge capacity to make EVs, thanks in large part to massive government subsidies. Now it's trying to export those vehicles to the West, which is crying foul over the unfair state support. In the latest wrinkles to this story, China's just filed a complaint with the WTO over recent U.S. subsidies for American-made EVs. Meantime, China is also preparing to dispatch its commerce minister to Europe to try and stop an EU probe into whether Chinese EVs get illegal state support. So let's start with the U.S. Many people may find it just a tad ironic that China is accusing the U.S. of unfair state support. Still, do you think its case will have a chance of success, since offering subsidies specifically for U.S.-made EVs does seem slightly discriminatory?
Yeah, I would suspect that at some point in time, the U.S. is going to file a complaint with the WTO about unfair subsidies by the Chinese government of EVs.
Mm-hmm.
So, very often when countries go to the WTO complaining about another country's practices, you get a tit for tat. Historically, you think about Boeing and Airbus when the Americans started to accuse Airbus of benefiting from unfair subsidies in the form of cheap loans and other practices from European governments. Then Airbus went ahead and sued or filed a complaint with the WTO against Boeing for getting unfair advantage from military contracts from the U.S. government. So, you always have to put all these things in perspective. WTO, all these world organizations these days, on the other hand, have become extremely politicized. So I'm not familiar with the inner workings of the WTO. But look, everybody loves to hate Americans these days in all of those, global institutions.
Right.
So who knows? But, beyond that, I agree with you. It's pretty ironic that that China is filing a complaint when, pretty much everybody knows that when it comes to EVs, when it came to solar panels, when it comes to all kinds of, important technology that the Chinese government has deemed of national interest, China has no problem providing substantial subsidies to companies in many different forms. It can come in the form of free land or cheap land to build manufacturing plants. It comes in the forms of special tax treatment, sometimes direct subsidies as well. And this has been going on forever. In the past, it used to be, to some extent on less glamorous industries. Today, it's to everything that is tech, and especially the parts of tech that that the Chinese government is determined to be of critical importance for China. So it's we'll see where that goes. But a perfect example of subsidies is in the tax sector. I mean, if you're a Chinese company and you do a non-tech business, corporate tax is 25%. If you do tech business, corporate tax is 15%. And if you're a company that has, a non-tech business, but with a relatively important or sizable tech component inside of your business, that part of the business is taxed at 15%, mm-hmm. while the rest is taxed at 25%. So, you know, I think that the whole world, at least in the West, has learned how the Chinese government behaves, how it subsidizes, you know, industries, and they've learned the hard way in many cases, especially with solar panels. So, you know, no surprise then shifting to, you know, Europe, that Europe has started that investigation, and they're not going to accept very easily that their market be flooded by cheaper Chinese EVs that have been heavily subsidized in their mind.
Well, that's okay. So then let's move on to that part. The Europe. I mean, China's sending their commerce minister, at least that's what the media are reporting. They're going to send their commerce minister to Europe, you know, and it seems like he's almost certainly going to be trying to talk them out of this investigation and protective tariffs and, you know, that would probably result. Do you think that it's possible that China might be able to reach some sort of compromise with Europe on this issue? And you know, if so, what kind of compromise do you think we could see?
Well, you know, when it comes to politics, it's, you know, just as glorious as horse trading. you know, who knows? I mean, if you just focus on the car industry, right? Obviously, Europe has, the Germans in particular, have substantial car manufacturing operations in China. So the Chinese government may feel that they have some leverage there, and that if only on the principle of fairness, if European cars were allowed in China, Chinese cars should be allowed in Europe. The leverage is probably today not as strong as it used to be, or was, you know, up until, I would say, 2 years ago. China is, unlike any other country, massively transitioning into EVs, away from traditional internal combustion engines. As a result of that, the sales of all foreign cars, but German cars in particular, in China are shrinking, and they're having a hard time competing with electric products against Chinese products domestically, primarily because of price. So on the European side, you know, I think that the manufacturers are trying to put a brave face on it, but their prospects are not particularly very good going forward. Mm-hmm. Now, that inevitably, I'm sure, is going to be put on the table by the Chinese side. On the other hand, probably the Europeans will retort that, yes, they were allowed to go into China, but only basically if they share the technology with Chinese companies, and that China benefited greatly from that. And the result is, you know, what we see today in terms of competition. There are other issues in Europe, in between Europe and China overall. Now, let's also understand that European car manufacturing is primarily Germany, a little bit France, and a little bit Italy when it comes to access to the China market, right? Mm-hmm, right. What do you see in China? You see Mercedes, you see BMW, Volkswagen, Audi, you see very few French cars, and you see almost no Italian cars other than Ferraris and Maserati.
All right.
It's very concentrated in Europe. Europe is 27 countries in total, right? The European community. Hmm. Three of them basically have, you know, some sort of presence in China's automobile market, mostly Germany.
Mostly Germany, actually. Yeah.
So, you know, then you look at the Eastern countries in Europe, and their big beef, other than Hungary, somewhat is, you know, Ukraine and China's support to Russia. And that seems to, you know, get reinforced from time to time. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of, you know, love these days to, you know, on the part of European countries to do things for China that hurt some of them at least. So I don't think this is going to go very far. There may be some concessions, but, you know, the auto industry in Europe employs hundreds of thousands of people. Europe remembers very vividly what happened to their, you know, solar industry after China started to flood Europe with cheaper and cheaper and cheaper solar panels and the loss of jobs that resulted from that.
Right.
So that is pretty much what is driving now this somewhat growing opposition to letting China do the same thing with EV cars. Europe does not want to be basically, you know, taken off the map in the car industry with hundreds of thousands of casualties on the employment side.
Right. I was going to say, we also saw the same thing happen with the telecoms equipment before with Huawei.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, right. So I guess they've learned their lesson. All right. Well, let's move on. Next, we're going to look at Alibaba, whose plan to break itself up into six pieces announced last year drew a lot of attention and praise at the time. But now it seems that plan is starting to unravel. First, Alibaba announced it was scrapping its plan to spin off its cloud unit, citing changes in market conditions. Reports also emerged towards the end of last year saying it was scrapping its plans for an IPO by its Fresh Hippo supermarket chain due to weak market sentiment. Now, Alibaba's just announced that it's also scrapping plans to spin off its Cainiao logistics unit. So, Renee, can you comment specifically on the case with Cainiao as to why Alibaba's ditching the spinoff plan? And here we should also note that rather than spin off the unit, Alibaba has also announced it's going to pay almost $4 billion to buy out the 36% of Cainiao it doesn't already own. So it's really moving almost in the exact opposite direction.
But they're buying that back at a discount. Relatively steep discount to expected valuation in the IPO scenario. So, that business obviously is highly dependent on the state of the economy, primarily the consumption economy in China. They obviously, unlike the original business of Alibaba when they started, this is not a business that, you know, has no competition. I mean, they are well-established competitors in the market. The economy is slowing. The stock market is not good. I think it makes sense. And by the way, I mean, you just cited three companies inside the Alibaba world that they've pulled their IPO plans or spin-off plans due to market conditions, but they're not the only ones. Syngenta, which is that Swiss company that was acquired by Sinochem a few years ago, just pulled its A-share IPO after 3 years of trying to go to market, reportedly for the same reason, which is unstable market, uncertain markets, and obviously all of that, you know, continues to be driven somewhat by the state of the domestic economy. So, you know, once you go to market, you try to go to market, especially with a sizable IPO, in a market where, you know, seemingly you do not really have a huge competitive advantage. I mean, often it makes sense to just wait and hope and pray, I guess, for
things will get better.
For better times in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what they're doing. Now, this being said, Alibaba today is clearly not the Alibaba that rocked and rolled, you know, in the past. If you look at their core original business, which is e-commerce, they've lost ground to a company like Pinduoduo, which I believe today actually has a market cap slightly bigger than Alibaba's. So, you know, it's in the West, we have learned and we have seen over the last 30 years kind of awakening then that, you know, big conglomerates at some point in time become too big, too diversified, have businesses that are not necessarily creating lots of synergies and so on, but also become so big overall that they become very difficult to manage. Right. And then you end up with, you know, the market creating what is known as a conglomerate discount. It affected everybody. The only one that kind of survived and almost thrived a bit was GE under right. Jack Welch. But once he was gone, that was the end of that story as well. So it's tough. When you're very successful, you grow very fast, you become bigger and bigger, you venture into more and more businesses and so on, it's very difficult to repeat.
Right. Well, and Alibaba really, they never repeated anywhere besides e-commerce. I mean, none of these right. spin-offs seem to have anybody very excited.
Right.
So, well, how about on the topic, I mean, you know, this whole breakup. I mean, the idea, you know, everybody was like applauding it and it was going to lock on, you know, shareholder value and stuff. I mean, do you think Alibaba is having second thoughts about the breakup, or is it really just timing because valuations are bad? You know, do you think that these, you know, that it's still planning to go ahead with the breakup at some point, just maybe not right now?
Well, I think that, I mean, if you look at history, breakup makes sense. It's been proven again and again and again that when you have, you know, when you have so many businesses, first of all, at some point in time, I wouldn't say you consciously starve some of those businesses, but there's only so much money to throw around. There's only so much intellectual capacity at the level of management to throw around a growing number of businesses and so on. And once your core business starts getting, under attack, most of the time the reflex is to actually, you know, refocus on that business. You know, you lose a bit of attention to the other businesses. The concept of core business is a real concept. Is stick with what you do best and you know to do best, and that, you know, you have enough intellectual, management, financial resources to throw at it to continue to grow it or protect it. So the concept makes perfect sense. It's the concept of unlocking value
right.
by liberating, if you want, different businesses, letting them focus on themselves and thrive on their own. And very often they do. Not always guaranteed, because with time going by, economic changes and so on, some of these businesses may not have such a brilliant future again. But conceptually, yes, it makes sense. So I think that I would be surprised if they undid the plan. They're probably going to wait for better market conditions. And they may actually, who knows, maybe do some trade deals, selling, I don't know, Fresh Hippo maybe to somebody else who's already in the supermarket business, would see value in it because of the technology that it uses and so on. I think everything is possible, but I think it makes sense to continue to execute the plan, hopefully, you know, at a better market, with a better market timing. Unless they become very concerned that the core business is under such competitive pressure that overall they need the revenues and whatever profitability from the other businesses to shore up the profitability of the whole. Time will tell.
All right, well, I can't see that happening, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. All right, but anyway, we'll wrap it up from there. Thanks to everybody for listening this week. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and rate us and share us on your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to join us again next week for another edition of China Inc., when we'll look once more at the latest trending Chinese business topic. Hope to see you all then. Goodbye for now.
Goodbye. Thank you all.